This is John Ladley.
And Mark Cooper.
Welcome to the Rock Bottom Data Feed.
Hey, Mark.
Yeah?
Aren't we forgetting something?
Like what?
Like the open, you know, the cold open segment, Nick Guy, Arcadadiology, Rosie and Gilbert. Is the talking moose going to be here?
No, I am not.
We gotta have an open.
But this episode doesn't have an opening segment.
What do you mean, we don't have an opening segment?
Which part didn't you understand? This episode's a compilation of stories, outtakes, and miscellaneous bits that didn't make it into our Series 4 shows. Think of it like emptying the leftovers from the fridge and making a stew.
I like stew. Well, let's see. I got the cut sheet. Looks like there is a little bit of everything here. A bit of behind-the-scenes secret sauce. There's some production sausage-making. A lot of meaty conversation with our guests that was trimmed from the episodes in the 4 series. I'm getting hungry. I see you did include the recording from that production call that you might say we went a little off the rails.
Yeah. I asked ChatGPT if it'd be okay.
Really?
Yeah. It was fine with it. Said it fit with the general irreverent tone of the show. I'm not sure if we should be insulted or not, but anyway, I got sign-off on it, so if we get grief, we'll take it up with OpenAI.
Well, but still, what about the open? The radio play, cliffhanger, four-part story arc, the witty banter between the hosts.
Well, banter between hosts we can do.
I said witty banter.
I'll do my best. So does that mean we can use this for both the open and the introduction?
Are we recording?
I hope so.
Then yeah, I suppose.
Good.
Then let's get going with the best parts of the 4th series that didn't quite make it into the episodes.
Each guest on the Rock Bottom Data Feed is briefed on the show's format. Here's a glimpse into some of the conversation that precedes the interview. When you're a guest on the show someday, this is what we'll tell you beforehand.
Just a quick overview of our format. We have an interview and we'll have questions and you answer and things like that. If I put up my hand, that means I need a break or I need, you know, we need an edit point or something like that. And that means, you know, stop. And I'll count us down for some things. We have 2 segments. We have our interview, but then we have the game show called the Audio Rorschach Test. And we're going to not tell you much about it other than we will ask for your spontaneous reaction to something that we present to you. Okay. And because our podcast does present serious content, but we have a lot of fun and we do not have sacred cows. So if you have our permission, Stan, to just take a shot at anyone you want to take a shot at today. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. We'll let the lawyers figure out whether we should put it out there or not.
And I can bleep out anything that iTunes is going to get us in trouble for.
And then the fact that we're on a podcast, you know, I called something bullshit a few weeks ago and it went out there to the ether and people were, you know, yeah, you're right, man. That's bullshit.
I know.
We don't want sacred cows. We want people to hear. We don't want, you know, look, Stan, you go to a new customer and all that. You have to be dignified and professional and all that. And every so often, you know.
All my skills, John.
Yeah, what's that?
It's one of my prime skills.
Yeah. Yeah. We all have our core competencies, right?
And yes.
So ready, we'll just go 3, 2.
John was responsible for the Arcadataology segment about the Bradshaw's Guide train schedules. We were chatting on a production call, and John mentioned that Bradshaw received a lot of pushback from the train companies about sharing their schedules. That was a surprise to me.
I looked at hundreds of pages of stuff on this to slap this thing together. They were furious.
Huh.
Because they, first of all, they were trying to own the hotels. They were owning the concessions. They were trying to vertically integrate the whole thing. Mm-hmm. The other thing is there were hundreds of railway companies at this time, and they were all scrabbling over enough business for only about 20 of them. Mm-hmm. Right. So it was cutthroat, and no one wanted anybody to tell what its timetable was because they considered that a competitive advantage. Yeah. And there was a lot of fibbing. You know, they would say, we have a train that leaves every 10 minutes. And you'd go, no sweat, I'll just show up. Yeah, well, it turns out that the trains at 10 after and 20 after and 30 after were for livestock. And the only passenger service was at 40. And then they went back to livestock again. Huh. Yeah. Because what really lit up the Industrial Revolution was the steam engine put into transportation. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you could get butter from Yorkshire to London in 5 hours.
Yeah.
And that was unheard of.
Yep.
And the Victorians were already just bonkers with the fact that they were going to make modern life so convenient and so perfect and hit this utopian thing based on engineering and technology. Yep. Yep. Right. So
I always think the interesting statistic is that the fastest any human had traveled, other than somebody who had fallen off a cliff, traveled on purpose, was on a horse until the railway.
You talk about how a term gets embedded. During World War One, in the British military, telling someone that they were a Bradshaw was derogatory because it meant, as an officer, they only repeated the facts that everyone already knew. Hmm. So they would call you a Bradshaw, and it was derogatory.
Oh.
Well into the 1960s, when timetables become available in newspapers and on digital media, the timetables, I think it was in the 1930s, all these railway companies were merged into 6 nationalized railroads in the UK. And well until the 50s, when everyone got used to it, you still called the timetable the Bradshaw. Huh. It wasn't, what's the timetable? People would say, what does the Bradshaw say? I mean, it became a total synonym for a timetable.
Like
now, once they started posting it online and on big boards, electronics and stuff, then that went away, you know. But so it's an interesting culture there.
Yeah. We talked with Tony Mazzarella about his research and a survey that was offered internationally. In this clip, he mentions that he got very little response from one particular country. We know from others, though, that information management is very important there. It's just that very little of it is shared with the rest of the world.
Anything?
And John, honestly, one of the, you know, within that, just to add a little color and a way to think about it, you know, and I don't know how you guys always, you know, would want to shape it. But I wonder about these things, like you brought up China. You know, what does that mean for the U.S. and our economy and these power dynamics that are shifting right now? You know, I opened my research up to the world. I got very little response from China, but I would have loved to compare certain metrics and insights between us and China, because I do think there are macroeconomic implications and, you know, political implications to that sort of thing.
Well, the thing with China,
talk about society.
The thing with China, like with my book, is my first edition was copied and it was just stolen.
Yeah.
Okay. Their disregard for intellectual property is still well understood.
Yeah.
Second edition, we've been lucky so far. I think your survey was given and it was handed out, but you're never going to see the data. They're going to crunch it themselves. Okay.
Right.
That's what's going to happen there, because they are, corporations do not do anything without a data catalog now, you know,
right.
It's up there with, you know, the guys that did the Bad Baby formula came to a sorry end. It's kind of up there in that consequence realm. So they're very serious about it. So it's a great laboratory, but I don't know. Chinese, you don't see things. You don't see the results of it. If they like it and they take it and they run with it, we won't see the results for a while. But
we won't see them directly. I think we'll see them indirectly.
We'll see the outcomes, and I think we already are seeing.
I think so.
Some of those outcomes, right?
Yeah, and I, you know, they're liable to be way ahead of us in AI, and you know, accurate application of AI versus our somewhat hit and miss applications that are happening now.
It'll be our generation Sputnik moment.
Yeah,
I think. Well, that's a good way of putting it. Yeah. See, boy, I just like hanging with smart people like this. I feel better about myself. Thank you very much, guys.
John Padfield was very interesting to talk with and had a lot of great stories. Here are a few that he told before the actual interview started.
So by way of introduction here, thank you, first of all, for being on the Rock Bottom Data Feed, which is our official name. And you are came to our attention because I was watching your podcast, and you're a data person. Mm-hmm. But you're not a data person like we are data people, which is kind of interesting. So your podcast is, and your organization, Business Reform Channel on YouTube, correct?
Yes.
You educate consumers, mm-hmm. business and technology impact, and you're really trying to give people more power, it seems, to us.
Exactly. I describe my channel as the intersection of business, technology, and society. I'm a business professor at Indiana University. I don't talk about the university much because I don't want to imply that they endorse my views or that I endorse all of their views, but I am a business professor. I'm a former state representative, so I understand public policy better than many people. And my origin story, I started off my career as an electrical engineer. So that combination of technology, business, and society kind of puts me in a place to have a unique perspective on business practices. When I look at a company like Meta that presents itself as, we're just here to help people connect and make billions and billions of dollars harvesting data without people fully realizing what that means. Yeah. Because, I mean, let's just be blunt. Nobody reads the 17 or 32 page privacy policy. And even if you do, if you don't have a law degree, you have no idea what it means.
Yeah,
we may share your data with business partners. Basically means we're going to sell your data. We were taught as children, it's good to share. And so no company out there is selling your data. They're just sharing it with their business partners. And business partners means people that give them money. So there's a lot of word games. There's a lot of shady business practices.
Yeah.
And that's what I try and mm-hmm. put a spotlight on.
That's wonderful. And the combination of an engineer and a data person and a business person is, well, some sectors would say that should be outlawed because it makes us pretty capable people. But you're looking at the data through this thing now. So point of connection here, I was reading on your bio on your university thing. You teach analytics or have taught analytics?
Yes, I teach a couple of different courses. The course I have taught most often is an introduction to data analytics, but I've also taught a course on data visualization. Well, I graduated from Purdue originally in 1988 with an electrical engineering technology degree, went back to Purdue mid-career to get a master's in industrial technology, and then stuck around for another 5 years part-time to get my PhD in technology leadership and innovation. Mm-hmm. So that's my background. All of my education was with Purdue, and I started teaching as an adjunct for Purdue. In 2015, I took a four-year contract with Purdue to teach full-time. And when that contract was expiring, I was teaching here in Columbus, Indiana. And one of the professors from Indiana University reached out to me and asked me if I'd be interested in teaching for the Division of Business at Indiana University, yeah. Columbus. And so that was my career progression.
Connection there.
We're going to ask you, Rock Bottom Data Feed is going to ask you to apply your expertise today to the way we are dealing with this world of data. So there's this world of data we have now that Mark and I talk about. The impact on society is maybe greater than the Industrial Revolution. In terms of the ebb and flow of capital and people and social behaviors and things like that. But we're looking at it through different keyholes than you are. But we think, and our theme for our whole program is, this is an anthropological element now. This is anthropology, what we work on, what we talk about. And we don't think we're very well equipped as a society. So today we want to tap your expertise and the way you look through into this data room through your keyhole and apply it and see how that's, you know, reflected in your work. That sound like a plan?
That sounds great. I'm looking forward to this discussion.
Okay, great. great.
Sometimes it's hard to say goodbye. We get on a roll talking with our guests, and it seems there's always one more interesting topic. We call that a Southern farewell. Once it's time to go, it's a half hour in the foyer, a half hour on the front porch, half hour in the driveway, and a half hour through the car window with the engine running.
Very good. Very good. And once again, John, thank you so much for being on Rock Bottom.
It truly has been a pleasure being here with you. And when you first reached out, I thought this sounds like a really interesting one, sounds like a kindred spirit in terms of data governance and things. And you have similar backgrounds, but different enough. I thought this is going to be really interesting.
And when I saw I watched your website for 6 months. I was watching your channel and I went, then all of a sudden, like in 6 months, I go, why am I going to ask this guy to be on the podcast? What the hell is wrong with me? I mean, it's because what all of a sudden you realize is, if this is anthropological, we're looking, you know, it's the old Hindu thing of the four blind men and the elephant.
Yes.
We are observing this data chaos, and you're looking at it from a standpoint of an engineer and a business person. And Mark and I have been blessed or cursed. We don't know the answer to this yet. Of starting out I was a programmer. I went to a really good school, and I came out economics and accounting and got a CPA. And then I got sucked into technology, and Mark started in technology, and we've been in it for a long time. But we've been in it from down here, and we're so into the forest for the trees that we don't realize that we are now part of something that's changing humanity. And it seems very profound, but it seems real and truthful that we really don't know what the hell we've gotten ourselves into. We're like the steam engines just proliferating across England in the 1830s and the 1840s, and we don't know what we're doing in society, but by God, this is a lot of fun. Okay, so unintended consequences, right?
Yeah. Well, one of the things I've started on my YouTube channel, there is a series, and I've only got two episodes in the series, but I call it Signals and Society. And what I do is I go back and I take a movie, a book, a television episode, and I view it through my lens. The very first one was a classic 1960 Twilight Zone episode called The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street, where something unusual happens. People's devices quit working. Their phone won't work. Their radio, their car won't start. And by the end of the episode, they're shooting each other. And it's because they got scared. They don't understand what's going on, and suspicion takes over. And now, you know, a neighbor saw you standing out in your front yard looking up in the sky last night. Well, what were you doing, John? Explain yourself. You had insomnia. But in light of all these weird things going on, you now become a suspect because you're behaving different than everyone. And I use that to talk about, okay, look how fast rumors spread on social media now. In this Twilight Zone episode, it took a few hours before people started going to war with each other. That can happen in minutes now with social media. It's just a matter of technology. Technology's not the villain. Technology didn't fundamentally
it's agnostic.
Mankind. We're still the same people we were in the 1960s.
That's the problem.
But technology sped it up.
Thank you so much, Dr. Padfield. And I say that with great respect. And
you're
we
very welcome.
We'll have you on again. And I that's it. Mark, anything else? If not, I'm going to shut this bad boy down.
Okay. Yep. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye, all.
Goodbye.
We want to take a minute here to thank our supporter, Dataversity. If you want to learn something about data, really anything about data, Dataversity is the place to look. They offer in-person classes, video classes, articles, white papers, and conferences. And use discount code ROCK15 to get 15% off your first purchase. Find them at dataversity.net. We had a lot of fun with our new fourth series segments, the 8-Bit Consultants, and especially the Data Poetry Slam.
Data Poetry Slam. Slam your data poetry.
Now that's what our audience is saying.
Yep.
Yeah, I was thinking more Patrick Stewart during COVID.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. He did all the sonnets, right?
Yeah.
And so, all right, let me do this now. Engage. That's for the outtakes.
Every time John and I are on the phone together, it's a Counter-Threaded Productions all hands meeting. Someday we'll have the staff to iron out all the details, but until then, this is the kind of stuff that gets cut from the show.
Okay. I'm looking at our time here. I'm looking at the questions we have. Do we want to...
Wanted to hit the last two I had?
In this section?
Yeah. Those. And then you can whatever else you have on your list, and then the last two that we refer to as the two questions.
All right. So you get to your two, then you hand it back to me, and we'll start to move towards the wrap-up. Okay. You got your two. Sorry about that. We had to do some production stuff here, Christy. Sorry about that.
Because we don't have a staff. If we had a staff, the staff would be dealing with all that behind the scenes, and we would have a perfectly seamless show here.
But you're your own staff.
We are the staff.
Yeah.
We'll hope that changes. We'll hope that changes.
Yeah. Well, so go with your two, and then roll it back to me, and then I'll just take it to the end, okay?
Okay.
All right. Three, two, one. Okay, listen, for the interest of time and respecting people's calendars here, I'm going to go back on. So, and you're going to edit all this out. So I'll give you a nice gap here and I'll do the next question. Okay.
I just need 2 minutes at the end. So it's good.
Yeah. Well, cause you're going to do the music,
game
right?
Show.
Okay.
But you have the music.
I have the music. You have the voiceover. Okay.
Yep.
We take turns on these things cause our egos are so big, Christy. It's just, anyway.
That's why we use the headphones. Because otherwise, our heads wouldn't fit in the...
It wouldn't fit in the door, yeah.
Our final fourth series guest was Sam Spencer. When the Zoom call started, we couldn't help but notice the large Lego Millennium Falcon set on the table next to him and several models on the shelves behind him. We had to ask.
What other science fiction things you have on the back shelf?
I see
there.
Tokyo Tower.
There's... Oh, my goodness. We have a real, honest to gosh.
I've done the typewriter is awesome.
And there's the spaceship from the Matt Groening cartoon.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Wow.
Yeah. And is there some Thunderbirds stuff back there? Is there some Thunderbird stuff back
there? Oh, those right at the top.
Yeah.
No, that's just like, it was just like a little art that they made. So most of these have a story. Wally was from Denmark. I picked him up when I visited him, a friend who worked at Lego.
Yeah.
These ones I constructed in the maternity room when my son was born. So we had time to kill, so we made that. Some of these are also, all of the cities are basically the equivalent of postcards, so that's where I've gone. Birthdays, big contracts, like all of them just kind of, this is my story.
Awesome. That's Lejo, as Mark and
Lejo.
Lejo the proper Lejo. Pronunciation. That's another story we'll have to be embarrassed about and tell you someday.
We talked with Sam for the better part of an hour. We had a great conversation and plenty of material for two episodes. But then we chatted for another half hour. Another Southern farewell. It started with the description of a unique type of visualization, if you could call it that, where data is translated into sound.
Do you guys know about, like, data audio visualization stuff?
Mm-mm.
So I read this research years and years ago, and it was talking about how people are really, really receptive to sounds at a very subconscious level. And it was in the context of data centers and alerts. And what it would do was it was this experiment where they had music that was generated from notifications and alerts and traffic volumes within data centers. And the idea was, if you heard particular noises in particular ways, you would automatically go, "That's strange." You've got this very serene jungle setting, and then all of a sudden, all these tigers start growling, and you're like, one of the servers is down. And you could actually pick particular voices out. And they were doing, there was, I don't know what happened with those experiments, but they were doing experiments in, for monitoring, like people actually doing, like audio, like converting data into audio. I did one where I think it was the consumer price index, because it was a nice longitudinal data set, and you could actually hear recessions in the change of the tune of the music.
Oh, I like
So
that.
I'll see if I can
I
find
like
that
that.
for
It's a callback to the nursing days where you have nice even beeps and
It
then
is.
something beeps. No, seriously. Then
Yes,
something starts
exactly.
beeping differently and gets everyone's attention.
I bring aviation metaphors in because of my hobby. And back in the 70s or so, they were automating more and more jet fighters, automating. And then there was a beep for this and a boop for that and a squeak for that and a thing. And it got to the point where the pilots were actually ignoring all the audio cues. It just went into the background of things. And they were like, well, why did they fly into the mountain? Because they didn't hear, even though that was gone. And they'd said, well, we have to make this stand out. And that's where you got voices, where you've heard them all now on TV. And it's like, pull up, pull up. And if they really want an alert, it's a female voice, because
Really?
both genders will respond because of the maternal instinct, will respond to a female voice. So if it's a low altitude alert, you will hear low altitude in a feminine voice. But if you're just approaching a runway that's active on the GPS system, it will be God like, dude, you're coming to the runway. But if they have something emergency, it's like, oh, son, there's this large mountain in front of you. And so, yeah, again, it's the same thing though. We've got five senses. We have to use all of them.
Preparing for this episode, I watched a TV interview Sam did with Sky News. He was answering a question when they ran out of time in the segment, and he didn't get to finish. I was curious what he was going to say. I was watching the interview that you had on Sky News. At the end, she was asking a question about, why should viewers at home care about better transparency, and why should, and you were talking about, that who's using it and how do we dispose of it and legislative, and all that good stuff. And then you started to say, but I don't think that's, and then you ran out of time.
Oh, right.
And
I
she
think,
interrupted. I'm like, I don't think
yeah.
that's what.
So, I like it, it I you know, I think I was going to say, I don't think that's important, because as I was saying, diversity is like, we love what I've started to call for us, like, the bleep bloop nerd data shit, right? Like, we love the standards and the ISOs and like those kind of things. And when I was doing the interview most recently, I was talking with a guy, and he's like, "What's the human impact of this data breach?" And this has kind of come from me just getting really frustrated with our PR team being so successful. And they're like, "Sam, comment on this data breach, comment on this data breach." So I'll give you guys a heads up for season two. We're actually building a data breach register, which is just a metadata register, just a list of data, right, that I know about is on the dark web. And I was talking with this guy, and he's like, "What's the human impact?" He's like, "Oh, economic this or economic that." And I'm like, I just kind of got to the I've gotten to the end of my tether. I don't know if you've picked up from my writing, and I put something on the blog recently that I thought was a really good introduction for the book that I'm writing about contextualizing data and saying, this is rows of people's lives, right? That's why this matters. Is like, there was a federal court data breach, where they just sent the data to the wrong person in the wrong country, and it was just a bunch of like victim transcripts. And I said most recently is like, data is like the plural of secret. Like, every single one of the rows in that database is like, that's someone's victim transcript. Like, that was the one of the most impactful things of their lives. And that's what I think we need to recognize, is like, that's the human impact, is like, people are going to be scared to give you data. People are going to remember these things, right? One of my
Absolutely.
team was caught up in an IVF fertility data breach, and that happened like 2 years ago now, but they say it like it happened yesterday. And I'm like, that's the human impact, is like every single one of those rows in a column is someone's life. And now these secrets are gone. And that's where I was going with that, is to say, like,
I think we need to put, that's good feedback for us, Mark, because we've got the story that my daughter shares, and we're finding more and more of a connection, especially with AI stuff coming in here, between process-centric type things like quality improvement and data-centric things like your dynamic data governance. And we're finding that where they're coming together, where they can make the most impact, is the fact that, and our theme from day one of this podcast has been this whole topic is anthropological. To say that it's just technical talk is just absolutely irresponsible. This is about how people in the 21st century are figuring out how to be people in the 21st century. And the fact that because we're so interconnected now with these stupid things, all right, it is our lives. It is to that point where it affects people's lives. And I mean, I know you're going to get asked that question again. I would say, how does it affect people? Say, data can cost people their life. It can cause great harm and great damage, and we don't want any bad habits around data, no matter what agency you're in.
Well, I think it's just
Right.
like
That's
I
it.
think that, like, yeah, it's like this is the secrets we share with people, like, so that we can get
Absolutely.
a service. Like, do you want that exposed? Like,
No.
Well, and even beyond exposure, taking some care with it. And I won't go into all the details, but I had a situation with medical records, and somebody didn't pay attention when they were doing medical record data entry. And that caused me 8 months of enormous headache.
Metaphorical or physical, like actual.
Both.
Oh
Very,
yeah, that's,
very, very aggravating.
and that's why, like, I think, I like my friend Heather, she was the one who put a lot of that in my head, is like, I think we need to figure out how to make what seems technical and really help people understand what it means. It's like, like data is just, every time we enter a form, it's data. Like, it's somebody's thing, and it's like, you feel a little bit, disingenuous, like, because the story that I put in the op-ed for this one is like, we breached all of this federal government data, and people talk about how people are reluctant to go to the police now to share details of crime because they're not sure of where it's going, and that's most prevalent in domestic violence, where people are concerned that if that data is leaked to the wrong person, there are going to be repercussions. So when we say, data isn't really important, what we're saying is it's not important that we keep your secret safe from harm, and that just leads to them not wanting to give that in future, right? And that's what I think it is contextualizing it, and it
Yeah.
feels like if it bleeds, it leads. You're kind of digging on the heartstrings, but it's like, well, it's also
No,
the truth.
it's one of those things where that's absolutely the truth.
Sam has had several very interesting occupations, and the end of the conversation degenerated slightly into Sam's time as a strip club bouncer and a comment that he made in the press about the need for changing tables in men's restrooms. No, but I'm going to tell you, I'm 100% behind you in the changing table issue.
What? You put years of effort into data research. You put years of effort into making things understandable. The biggest thing I have done, the most interesting thing that people have ever come across, my son's shitty diaper, right? My
Well,
son's that. It blew everything away.
we have now come to our last outtake, and it requires a content warning. A common internet meme reads something to the effect of, "I'm at the age where my mind still thinks I'm 29, my body keeps asking me if I'm sure I'm not dead yet, and my humor topped out at 12." While researching the Bradshaw's Guide, John ran into a Wall Street Journal article about the panic that inevitably accompanies new technology. In it, cultural anthropologist Genevieve Bell mentions that people at the time steam engines started carrying passengers believed that acceleration to a certain speed could cause women's reproductive organs to fly out of their bodies. It seems ridiculous in retrospect, but there were those who were convinced at the time, and it made for some wild mental imagery.
Well, they told Queen Victoria that, because she wanted to ride one of these things, mm-hmm. she said, this is a great way to get around my kingdom. Mm-hmm. They said, oh, no, you cannot. I don't tell you, but the doctors have told many women they cannot ride the train because it goes over 50 miles an hour and your uterus will fall out. Absolutely what medical professionals said. That thing hits 52 miles an hour and all these reproductive organs are flying out the window. Whee!
There's a mental image for you.
That's
50 mile an hour train passing by and you get hit with a dozen uteruses.
A train leaves London at 60 miles an hour and another train leaves Liverpool at 50 miles an hour. When will the uteruses run into each other? Hey, are we going to do an outtake? That's an outtake joke right there.
There you go.
That's an outtake joke.
Oh, my goodness. So
at what location? Somewhere near Birmingham, all the uteruses.
That's where they – as soon as the train is up to speed,
yep.
just make sure the windows are open. Otherwise, it's a real mess in the carriage.
It's messy, yeah. Yep. And the queen herself was like, you're so full of get the train. And she got on. I've learned this through watching this television. There was one thing that got her, though, was when the train would stop, they would stop. Wherever they were, all the trains, all the other in traffic had to stop too, because she wanted lunch, and they all got off and had a picnic, and they got back on. Mm-hmm. And when she had her picnic, people would go, this is where the queen has her picnic. And before long, the train would stop wherever she was going, and she'd get off to have a picnic. And in the distance, a mile or two away, mm-hmm. is this huge circle of people watching the queen have her picnic, because mm-hmm. it's the queen.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was Charles right now, he'd be like, so there's a lot of railway lines that have trees running along them for no apparent reason in the UK. But the reason is the Queen said, plant trees. Yeah. I will dine behind the trees.
Huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, kind of cool things like that. Yeah.
Learned all sorts of good stuff.
This broadcast is for informational purposes only and should not be considered legal advice. Counterthreaded is not responsible for any losses, damages, or liabilities that might arise from the use of this podcast. The views expressed in this podcast may not be those of the host or the management. This podcast is not intended to replace professional medical advice.
Well, there you have it. Not sure anything could follow that anyway. We'll leave it to our remaining listener to decide. But the metaphorical refrigerator is now empty and ready to be filled with fresh 5th series episodes. And be sure to visit dataversity.net and use discount code ROCK15 to get 15% off your first purchase. Until next time, this has been John Ladley and Mark Cooper for the Rock Bottom Data Feed. Thanks for listening, and remember, when you're here, you've reached rock bottom. You can find more information about the topics covered in this episode, the fuss about airborne internal organs and other novelties, at our website, rockbottomdatafeed.com. The Rock Bottom Data Feed is a Counterthreaded production, copyright 2026, all rights reserved.